You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Bruce Feiler has written a string of best-selling books on faith, family, and finding meaning in everyday life, including Abraham, America's Prophet, and Walking the Bible, and he also wrote and hosted the PBS miniseries based on that book. He is one of only a handful of writers to have four consecutive New York Times nonfiction bestsellers in the past decade. He was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer soon after he became the father of twin daughters, and he worried about what their future might be without him. So Bruce Feiler's called his latest book, which is his 10th, The Council of Dads, My Daughters, My Illness, and the Men Who Could Be Me. It's published by William Morrow, and I'm very pleased it has brought him back to our show. Hi.
Nice to be back with you, Lenny.
What kind of cancer were you diagnosed with?
I had an osteosarcoma.
I don't know what that is.
In my left femur. It's a rare form of primary bone cancer. 600 Americans get an osteosarcoma every year. 85% are under 21. So only 100 adults a year get one. It's actually the same disease that cost Ted Kennedy's son his leg in 1973. And basically, 20 years ago, they would have cut off my leg and hoped there was a 15% survival rate. They determined that one cocktail of chemo was effective, and I went through this. So I had 4 months of chemo, a 15-hour surgery in which the head of orthopedic surgery at Sloan Kettering took out my femur, replaced it with titanium, took my fibula from my calf and relocated it to my thigh, and took out a third of my quad. Only two people before me have ever survived the surgery. And then they sent me back for 4 more months of chemo, and now I'm a year later, I'm cancer-free and walking. But for 15 months, I was on crutches, and I've come here today without crutches or a cane.
The last time you were here to talk about America's Prophet, you had a cane, if I remember correctly. The prognosis was you weren't likely to survive, and it turns out now you're cancer-free.
Correct. And, as you said about – in that early first week that this happened back in July of 2008, I sort of thought of my girls and the walks I wouldn't take with them or the boyfriends I wouldn't get to scowl at, the aisles I wouldn't walk down. And for me, I mean, maybe it's because I'm a writer, but I kept thinking about my voice and what would Daddy think about this and what would Daddy say about that. And 3 days later, we were on Cape Cod, talking about whaling here, and I woke up with this idea of how I could give him my voice. This letter was forming in my head, and I was crying at the time, and I went and got out of bed, and I sat in the sofa, and I wrapped myself in a blanket, and I said I was going to reach out to these six men, ask them to be present, and I said I'm going to call them the Council of Dads. And as soon as I said those words to myself, Lenny, I have to say, they kind of just filled the room. It felt like the idea had been in the world forever. If some kids are old souls, this was sort of an old idea, and I just wanted to live long enough to assemble them, and then I ultimately decided to write this book.
Well, a Council of Dads sounds great, but I know sometimes when people are asked to be executors of wills, it doesn't make them all that happy. What kinds of duties would these six guys have?
Well, one of the things I think that was key to this whole thing, first of all, I didn't want to tell my wife at first, right, because we should...
Well, it could be considered insulting to her, wouldn't it? There are many women who have faced crises like yours and have handled themselves and their children quite well throughout the course of history.
Well, I think that, for my wife, there's this whole thing in this culture that we have to happy our way through a problem. I thought we should focus on the positive. My wife's a very upbeat person. And she actually did love the idea, but then she started rejecting my nominees. She'd say, well, I love him, but I'd never ask him for advice. So starting a council was an efficient way to find out what she thought of my friends. We ended up, we made a set of rules, basically. So we said, no family, only friends. Your family would be there. Only men, because we were trying to fill the dad space. And then sort of intimacy over longevity. It didn't matter how long I knew them, more sort of whether they filled a part of me. And so the groups we ended up with were my oldest buddy, camp counselor, my college roommate, business partner, kind of a tortured romantic poet friend. And then this now gets to the answer to your question. I asked each one of them to play a specific role. Like, you teach them how to travel, how to think, how to ask questions, how to dream. And I think that that made it less overwhelming. I did it for emotional reasons, but it had this practical benefit.
Well, this is the sort of thing people often ask a godparent to take care of. But
you
didn't want to do that?
I think in the end, now that I've had time to think about it, and I've actually written a piece about this that'll be in the Times in the next week or so, is I think it's sort of like a team of godparents. So there's a lot of zombie godparents walking around out there, right? The parents who do the asking don't know what they're asking. The friends who do the accepting don't know what they're accepting. The kids are confused. This gave people a specific role. And the other problem with godparents is we stop asking when the kids are born. So, like, what happens if your kids are older? You might want to add new people. So I think of it sort of as a team of godparents.
Had they been around? Did they all know your daughters?
You know, to varying degrees. I think they live all over. One lives in Vermont. One lives in Savannah, my hometown, L.A. One lives in China. And I think that this has sort of brought them in. And I think that's really the key to this idea, which is that as parents, particularly parents of young children, we have our work. We have our family, but our friends get pushed aside. There's actually a lot in this culture that conspires against friendship, and this sort of builds a bridge between your family and your friends and gives them an excuse to be involved in your kids' lives.
Well, all six of these men seem quite busy in their own lives.
Yes.
Was it important to you that they were all high achievers?
No, it just happened to be. And in fact, they have different roles that they play. And so though they are all my friends, after all, they do different things. So one, the girls call my friend Jeff Tractor Jeff because we go visit them in Vermont. These are city girls. They live in Brooklyn, as you know. And so he drives them around our tractor and takes them milking cows, right? And so my friend Ben from Savannah, they call Tadpole Ben because he takes them fishing for tadpoles. So I think it's more important to me that they represent different sides of me. And then the key moment in the whole process in a lot of ways is when I sat down with each one and said, what's the one piece of advice you would give to my girl? So like my travel pal, Jeff, he says, you know, be a traveler, not a tourist, right? Approach a trip like you would approach a mud puddle. You can bend over and stick your finger in, or you can jump in and get covered in mud. And so I had this conversation with him, and tell my wife, I was like, you know what? This advice is meant for our girls, but I think we're the ones who really need it. And when I began to hear that, I said, you know what? I should write this book to capture this wisdom and let people pass it on to their kids if they want.
How active was your Council of Dads during your year of treatment, what you call the lost year?
They were very involved, Jeff. My travel dad sent me a postcard every single day for a year, and he runs a student travel company. He was all over the world. They stopped by. Now, some of them, I should say, one of them, Josh Ramo, whom you may know, Josh, he's not a dad himself, so he came to take the girls trick-or-treating. And here we were trying to put the girls to bed, and he's like sneaking candy bars from the bag and giving it to them after they brush their teeth. So it's like he needs more supervision than my girls do.
Were some of your friends who you didn't ask offended?
I was really worried about this, I have to say. And I did the very manly thing. I'm very proud of myself. I blamed my wife. So in the book, as you know, I said basically, you know, she got the last word. So I've completely hidden behind my wife's skirts to deal with my own girlfriend.
I really wanted you, Mike, but my wife thought that you probably weren't going to be the best for this. Bruce Feiler's latest book is called The Council of Dads, My Daughters, My Illness, and The Men Who Could Be Me. It's published by William Morrow. Do you think that men of your generation are different than the men of your father's generation?
Well, one of the things, you know, my book basically has a series of letters that chronicle my journey, portraits of each of these men and the life lesson I want them to embody. But then there's this whole memoir strand, me as a father, my two grandfathers, and my father's father, who took his life a month before I graduated from high school in 1983. He left behind 28 cassette tapes, chronicling his rise from dirt poverty in Mississippi to a small-town lawyer in Georgia. And none of us had ever listened to them.
Did he explain why he killed himself?
He didn't, but here's what he didn't do. He didn't mention his wife by name or talk about their courtship or marriage. He mentioned my father only once or twice, his grandchildren not at all. And it was clear that he was kind of lonely in a certain way, Lenny. He didn't have anybody to tell these stories to. And my father is actually a man of great wisdom. He has got these dadisms, and I've collected them about the 2% rule, like you should take a year and try something. It's only 2% of your life, right? It's much harder to bring down parents than to bring up children. Lots of these wisdoms, but he makes Twitter seem expansive. I mean, he's very short and crisp, like a lot of kind of Southern men. Here I'm spending an entire year writing a book of wisdom for my daughters to pass on to them, and I think there is this evolution. And the things we talk about are our feelings, our fears, even our weight. I mean, I think that these men are much more communicative. And Linda likes to say, my wife, that the things we were talking about, it's exactly what the moms talk about at preschool drop-off, that the same sorts of issues become what men discuss these days, kind of behind the locker room door or when we go fishing or something.
Well, one of your grandfathers collected epitaphs.
So he died 3 years before I was born. He was a urologist, actually, and he wrote the introduction to a sex book in 1936 that my mother didn't know about 70 years later. And at the time of his death, he had 9,000 epitaphs that he collected over 31 years. His wife typed them up in Baltimore, Maryland. And they were given to the Smithsonian. I went and got them out. And again, it was sort of a way to make contact with him. I mean, one of my lessons here for any parent is leave a trove. Leave something, whether it's letters or photos or something for your kids or your grandkids to be able to touch you long after you're gone.
Well, men have female role models as well.
Yeah.
Do you? Because this seems to be so much about the male role model.
Right, because I think our feeling was Linda would be there, and so I was trying to fill the dad space. So yes, in fact, probably half of my closest friends are women, but we tried to fill sort of the dad space in the girls' lives.
So did all six members of your group easily express their feelings?
You know, in one way or the other, I sat down with them and I asked them, you know, David Black, who is my literary agent, you know, being an agent is a broker of dreams in a world where most dreams don't come true. I don't have to tell you that. You talk to writers all day, every day. And so he said, you know, I would want to teach your girls what it's like to chase their dreams. I'm like, well, what if your dream fails? When I come to you, I'm at a wall. I'm at a point in my writing career. I'm struggling. He said, I don't see the wall. You're going to encounter a wall, but I'm going to help you find a way to get over it or around it or under it or through it. But whatever you do, don't succumb to it. Don't give in to the wall. And I think that was a great way of looking at how to sort of chase your dreams.
Now, we're all going to die. So we only a few of us will have rare forms of cancer. Are you kind of suggesting that we all should think along these lines?
I went to see my surgeon, John Healy, at the one-year anniversary. And as I said, he did the surgery on me. Only two people have ever survived. And I said, Dr. Healy, what would you tell my girls if they said, what should we learn from Daddy's experience? This is a very colorful man. He wears striped bow ties. He speaks three words a minute. I mean, you kind of hang on every word when you're the patient. He pauses as long as I've ever heard. And he said, everybody's going to die. But not everybody dies, he said. But not everybody lives. I would tell your girls to live. And I think that's in the end what I wanted to do with this book, was to create a sort of guidebook for living.
And you also have a website in which you have tips for starting one's own counsel?
Yeah, I started this site called counselofdads.com. It's got a starter kit, a way to put people in a little social network. And you know, what I'm seeing here is people say to me, oh, for the first few pages of your book, I think about you. And then they say, then I think about me. Who's in my council? Who's my tadpole, my oldest friend? And I think that what's so interesting is Linda now has a council of moms. She's got 10 moms. I'm seeing single moms do this because they want dads for their kids. I'm seeing parents of teenagers, my girls are just 5, doing this because their kids need to separate. Everybody acts on this idea of the council of dads or the council of moms, but everybody acts in a different way. And that's sort of what happens, I think, when you have something that just touches an emotional chord.
And nobody told you, you know, Bruce, I'd love to help you out, but I'm just too busy to be on this council. It would just take up too much of my time.
The first person I asked said yes, and I was like, I forgot there was a question, and it never occurred to me that somebody might turn me down. So no one's turned me down, and I gave them a specific thing to do, so I made it sort of less of a burden.
Bruce Feiler's latest book is The Council of Dads, My Daughters, My Illness, and The Men Who Could Be Me, published by William Morrow. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Always great to be with you, Lanny. Thank you.